I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. The Chiefs are Miami-bound for Super Bowl 54. After their victory against the Tennessee Titans yesterday, the team has one more hurdle to clear to win the national championship. Today, we'll discuss the Chiefs' chances for a second Super Bowl victory. Let us know what you thought of yesterday's game, what you think it'll take to defeat San Francisco, and what a victory will mean for Kansas City. Then, Kansas City still hasn't honored Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. After Paseo Boulevard's name change fell through, the question of what the city should rename for Dr. King remains. We want to hear from Kansas Cityans what the next move should be. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. By chance, have you heard that the Chiefs are headed for the Super Bowl? Well, they are. The Tennessee Titans are history. That leaves but one team between the Chiefs and an historic second Super Bowl victory, and that team is the San Francisco 49ers. One commentator described the teams as the most talented team, that's the Chiefs, against the most complete team, and that would be the 49ers. Today, we'll talk about the Chiefs' prospects in 2 weeks for a second Super Bowl title, Coach Andy Reid's need to win a Super Bowl title, and just how excited this city is for all of this. With us now are two veteran sportscasters, Greg Eklund from KCUR. Greg, welcome back.
Good morning, Steve.
Al Wallace is a longtime sportscaster for Fox 4. His new memoir, One for the Coyotes. He was on this program a few weeks ago talking about it. Al, welcome back. Good to have you.
Good to be here. My goodness, good to be here.
No kidding. Absolutely. We'd like to get the reactions of our listeners about this team and their big Super Bowl appearance in 2 weeks. What do you think? What's your prediction for the game? How emotional were you yesterday as it became clear that the Chiefs were finally headed back to the big game after 50 years? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. You know, Al, it strikes me there's a lot of emotion tied up with this team and the big win yesterday. What's that all about?
Emotion because it's been a half century.
Half century.
It's been a generation.
Yeah.
It's been 50 years. 50.
That's a lot of years.
You want some perspective?
Yeah.
Royals won a World Series championship in 1985, and we all rejoiced because it was 29 years,
mm-hmm.
and we thought that was a lifetime.
Yeah.
Add 20 years to that, and that's what you have with the Chiefs finally putting this thing to bed and headed to the biggest sporting event in the world, the Super Bowl.
How did you react to this game yesterday, Greg? I mean, you're a professional at this. Was there any emotion attached to what you were watching?
Of course there is. Because not only for those who have followed the Chiefs, but for those who cover the Chiefs. And when you cover the Chiefs and have known the heartbreak time after time. Have experienced. And then when you see them finally break through, you can't help but to be a little bit emotional about it.
I wonder how many tears were shed at that game yesterday as the clock wound down. Particularly among, I'm guessing here, maybe stereotyping unfairly, older Chiefs fans.
You know, I think about this. I grew up in Chicago, as some know, and I heard a great comment when the White Sox won the World Series in the 2000s. And I heard someone after that World Series being interviewed, and he says, "It's not so much about ourselves, but it's for our fathers and our mothers and their parents who experienced all the years without this joy, that this is the joy that they had been looking for so many through their years that they never had a chance to experience. And now we have the opportunity to experience this."
You're nodding your head, Al. Yeah.
I just, I keep thinking of those 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think of how many presidents. Think of how many other teams have done this repeatedly. Think of how many Chiefs coaches, head coaches, quarterbacks, how many press conferences, how many training camps, how many's,
mm-hmm.
just countless.
Yeah.
50 years.
You know, Greg, sometimes you get a feeling about a team and you hear this phrase, it's a cliche actually, that gets kicked around, team of destiny. Is this a team of destiny?
That's a funny question. But I when I looked at the preparation for this game, I likened it to the fast food joint's slogan, "A full meal deal," because the Chiefs had it on their plate. New England was out of the playoffs. Tennessee knocked out Baltimore, where the Chiefs were supposedly going to be playing the AFC Championship
game. The table was set. Yeah.
The table was set. The meal was there. It was time to digest it.
Hmm. Team of destiny, Al?
I don't think a team of destiny, because when I hear that, I think it's almost a one-time shot. This team, and Steve, if you'll allow me, this team, I think we all know, it's built around the quarterback position. The most important position, not only in football, but I believe in all of sport, is the quarterback position. I interviewed Clark Hunt back in 2006, right after his father passed away, and he became the chairman and CEO of the Chiefs. He had a list of things that he wanted this franchise to be built around. Community, he wanted it to stay in Kansas City. He had another two or three items. And among those was drafting and developing a franchise quarterback. Think about this. Over the last 18 years, Greg, you may have the exact number, 18, 19 years, only four other quarterbacks have represented the AFC in the Super Bowl. Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, Peyton Manning, and Falco, who's...
Joe Falco.
Yeah.
Flacco, right.
Four quarterbacks in 18 or 19 years. Patrick Mahomes is the fifth. Those four have had a lock on the Super Bowl because... they were franchise quarterback. And I said Falco, I meant Flacco, because he went to two, won them. The other three are instant Hall of Famers because they've won all of them, at least, well, Manning two, Roethlisberger three, and Brady six. These guys have had a lock.
And yet this team, Al, went year after year after year not drafting a quarterback in the first round. It became a joke around here. We need a quarterback, but we're not drafting one. Why? If Clark Hunt had it on his list.
And it wasn't just the Chiefs. So many other teams did the same thing. They drafted quarterbacks in the first round. You have to draft the right quarterback in the first round. Why was this guy right? Why was this the correct move? Yeah, the Chiefs, what, moved up 10 spots or something, 20, to draft Patrick Mahomes?
They moved up, and the question in Chicago when the Chiefs played there at the end of the season, when they saw that they had drafted Mitch Trubisky, was, why didn't we draft Patrick
It was this
Mahomes?
Particular quarterback, because they've tried other quarterbacks. They've drafted high. They've never drafted in the first round this guy or this type of guy, but it was specific to this guy.
And clearly, I mean, they moved up to the number 10 spot. I mean, you know.
They had other options.
Pat Mahomes was not number one or number two in this draft. He was number 10. But clearly, Andy Reid and company saw something in this guy that they just had to have.
Well, they had both Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes in Arrowhead Stadium before the draft. So they had a chance to check
options.
Both of them out because both of them were available with that pick. And the Chiefs, with what they, you know, they were quizzing him, they were interviewing him, and they saw sometimes it's the intangibles. Maybe it's that tremendous memory he had, that instincts that they sensed of this guy not only having the gifted athletic skills, but the type of leadership skills that it takes to lead a team.
But clearly, Deshaun Watson wouldn't have been a bad pick either, at least in theory.
Well, sure.
Who knows how he would have fit to go to Al's point. Yeah,
exactly.
The Chiefs saw some. I saw so many analytics on Mahomes. You know, bad form, bad technique, doesn't do this, doesn't do that.
Right.
Patrick Mahomes at Texas Tech played 3 years, never once, not one single time, beat another Big 12 team with a winning record. Patrick Mahomes is taking the Chiefs to the Super Bowl. So and they're going to the Super Bowl in large part due to his play and those intangibles Greg mentioned. Some of them we can't even define.
So why couldn't he take Texas Tech past even a formidable opponent and yet take the Chiefs to the Super Bowl? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Different game and
different defenses.
Different defenses, different team around him. different teams that he's going up against. He played in the Big 12, a league built around offense. He didn't have Andy Reid. He didn't have Andy Reid's coordinators. He didn't have Patrick Bieniemy. He didn't have the weapons. He is part of a perfect storm in the NFL. And my goodness.
They scored games in the 40s at Texas Tech that they couldn't win because they couldn't stop the other team from scoring 50.
They scored in the 40s. Somebody else was scoring the high 40s. They're in the 50s.
Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking about what else the Kansas City Chiefs, after the big game yesterday, they're going to the Super Bowl. We want your reactions. What do you think? Your prediction for the game? Your emotion after the Chiefs pulled this game out yesterday? 816-235-2888 is our phone number, or tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Greg, what are the storylines we're going to be hearing about the next 2 weeks? What's the media going to be feasting on here when it comes to headline stories day in and day out?
It follows what Al had mentioned. It starts with the quarterback, because you have two different and intriguing stories about these two quarterbacks. We know the Patrick Mahomes story. The San Francisco quarterback is a guy who was groomed to be Tom Brady's eventual replacement, but it didn't work out that way. He was traded to the 49ers. So instead of the one day that they had foreseen for him to take over for Tom Brady, he's taking his own show now to the West Coast with the 49ers.
Jimmy Garoppolo,
Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah. He was supposed to be the guy after Brady.
That's right.
And he would have been waiting a long, long time, perhaps, for that to come.
At least maybe two or three more years.
Yeah. What are some other storylines we're going to hear? Because Andy Reid's going to be one of them, and we all know that, Al.
Andy Reid, so long in this league, 20 years a head coach. This is his second trip to the Super Bowl. He had faced the Titans 9 times, only beaten them once, now twice.
Yes.
I like this second time around victory.
Yeah.
The Andy Reid storyline will be there, and will he finally win a Super Bowl championship? Will the Chiefs finally hoist a second Super Bowl championship? Will Union Station be suited up in red in 2020 like it was in blue, back 5 years ago? I will say San Francisco will have a slight edge when it comes to the defense they put on the field. The Chiefs will have a slight edge when it comes to their offense. The two things that both offenses have in common, Greg, I'm interested in your take, is speed. Mm-hmm. We saw that yesterday. We've seen it all year with the Chiefs, but we saw that yesterday with the ground game that the 49ers bring. They have guys who can get on the edge and get around the defense, especially if a defense is not as quick or doesn't have the speed that the Packers had, and it was evident.
But you don't look at Jimmy Garoppolo as being anywhere near the quarterback of Deshaun Watson or some of the other quarterbacks the Chiefs have faced. Am I right about that?
I think the Chiefs have faced a stiffer test, even though you have the name in Aaron Rodgers with the NFC opponents that the 49ers have played. I think the test was actually tougher for the Chiefs to get to the Super Bowl than
Absolutely.
The 49ers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Garoppolo is a good quarterback. He is he's better than a quote-unquote serviceable quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
He's better than what we saw yesterday with the Titans at quarterback. But he's got better pieces around him on offense. And he certainly got a better defense than what the Chiefs saw yesterday in Tennessee.
You know, there's a storyline out there. I heard one commentator sizing up these teams, or actually the four teams that were left before the games yesterday. But this guy described the Chiefs as the most talented team left in the pool. And the 49ers he described as the most complete team. I thought that was kind of an interesting set of comparisons. Does that make sense to you?
I could see where somebody would say that. And you know what made me think about, as you talked about the 49ers being a complete team, and this also lends itself to one of the storylines going into the Super Bowl. It's a team that has one ex-Chief on it on the defensive side, and one who cost the Chiefs a chance to go to the Super Bowl
last
year.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
D. Ford, known around these parts and will forever be known for being offsides in that game last year where the Chiefs got the interception, but they called the play back because D. Ford was offside. He has been an important part to that defense, but quite obviously they can win without him because he played much of this season either injured, unavailable. There were a couple of key games I saw on national TV where he didn't even play because of injury. They have got four or five first-round draft picks in their front seven. They have built this team, the 49ers, and Shanahan, the head coach. They have built this team with their defense. Keep in mind, the 49ers came in here last year to Arrowhead, week two or three, and the Chiefs basically lit them up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't remember the final score. It was a competitive score, if you will. But there was no doubt the best team on the field that day was the Kansas City Chiefs, and they were playing at Arrowhead.
You know, I was at that game. It was at Arrowhead, what I remember, and it was Pat Mahomes' first game as a coming out, first game as a starter. I don't know if the game was the first
home
game of the season.
First home game.
I was there. Yes. I was there. I don't go to many games, so I remember it vividly. My son was with me, and Garoppolo got hurt running down the left sideline and was out for, I think, the rest of the season, which is one reason why the team only won four games last year.
Chiefs lit them up. The Chiefs' offense lit up that defense, and it hadn't changed all that much. Now, they were on the road early in the season, and the Chiefs, as we know, the last two seasons with Patrick Mahomes have started hot, 4-0, 5-0, until other teams started to adjust. It'll be important in the upcoming game, the Super Bowl, that the Chiefs get off to a better start than they have the last 2 weeks. Yeah. I think that's extremely important, especially considering this will be the best defense they've faced in a while.
You know, you've mentioned now that one storyline here is going to be Andy Reid, and he's never won the big game. Let me just ask the hard question. If you have arguably the most talented team going into the Super Bowl, and if the team should lose, and given Andy Reid's record, not so great record in the playoffs going back so many years here, does it say something? Is there something lacking in him as a coach if he can't get this thing done?
You know, I think that's difficult to say right now because we're in the euphoric moment of celebrating the AFC Championship and getting to a place where the Chiefs haven't been.
And everybody loves Andy Reid. I get it.
Yeah, yeah. But, I don't know. There are, if it comes to a clock management, that has been always the knock against Andy Reid.
He can't manage the clock.
He can't manage the clock. And so if this game comes down to it in the fourth quarter, a close game where something is mismanaged on the clock, that will come up again, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Steve, a Super Bowl victory legitimizes so many things.
Yes.
A coach, a quarterback, a coordinator may get him a job. This is my question. If Andy Reid wins this game, if the Chiefs win this football game, let's say the game's over at 9 o'clock on Sunday night, mm-hmm. February 2nd, is Andy Reid, because of the previous 4 hours, that much better of a football coach than he was at 2 o'clock in the afternoon?
But you sports guys measure these things based on Super Bowl wins. It just goes hand in hand.
It does, and that's why I say one win, a big win, a Super Bowl win, will help legitimize a career. But it doesn't define a career. It helps legitimize it. But because you've done something. You have entered the record books on a positive side, and you have earned something, whether it's a piece of hardware or notability or whatever. You've earned something that very few, in the whole scheme of things, over time, and in this case 54 years, a finite amount of men have been able to do.
Keep this in mind, Steve. There are a couple of coaches who are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame that never won a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. One, Marv Levy,
mm-hmm.
who coached the Chiefs before he had Jim Kelly with the Buffalo Bills. And four Super Bowls that they never won.
Right.
And he's the one that immediately comes to mind. There's somebody else there who escapes me at the moment, but
Dan Reeves took two.
Well, Bud Grant with the Minnesota Vikings.
There you go.
Was the other one.
You've got numerous coaches that have taken numerous teams to Super Bowls that never won it. These are great coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Great coaches. Jimmy Johnson just elected to the Hall of Fame. He won two Super Bowls. He's not even in the Cowboys Ring of Honor.
Right.
So you
it's
almost something that we can't define, but a Super Bowl win will legitimize. It doesn't define your career. It helps legitimize your career.
Is there something about Andy Reid's coaching that has stood out to you over the years that would begin to explain, Al, why he hasn't won the big game?
I understand Greg saying, and I agree to a certain extent with him saying clock management. But a lot of times it's just right place, right time, right personnel. Sometimes those things escape you. My favorite Chiefs head coach of all time is Marty Schottenheimer.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't win those games. Somehow, yeah. Some way, just couldn't win those games.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's been 50 years since the Chiefs won this game. Awfully long time, as you've pointed out so well, Al. But other teams have gone longer, right, Greg?
Well, I know the Cincinnati Bengals haven't been in the playoffs for a long time. The Cleveland Browns haven't been in the playoffs for a long time. So they're and the Browns, they haven't won an NFL championship since 1964.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there are some teams that are pretty hungry as well.
Yeah. Pat Mahomes, amazing for a lot of reasons, Al. Maybe one reason is so consistently good from week to week, rarely seems to be a drop-off. Pretty unusual, isn't it?
Very unusual. The thing about Pat Mahomes, Patrick Mahomes, because his dad told me one time, he's Patrick, I'm Pat, so Patrick is the younger Mahomes, the mm-hmm. quarterback for the Chiefs. One thing that stands out about him is on the field, his leadership and his accuracy. He has thrown 84 touchdown passes, I think, Greg, over his career as a starter. He just tied or surpassed, I forget who it was yesterday, when he threw the 3 touchdown passes yesterday against Tennessee. He's so accurate. He throws a lot of touchdown passes. He throws so few interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
To separate yourself from mistakes or lethal mistakes like he does is a quality that very few quarterbacks in the National Football League have.
It's just amazing.
And he is, if you get a chance, Steve, I want you to go back and look at that touchdown run he had yesterday with 11 seconds to play in the first half. As he escapes the pocket, Greg, and gets closer to the sideline, it was as if he was in the backyard, your backyard, mm-hmm. maybe my backyard, those games we played as mm-hmm. kids. And this defender is pursuing him, and he takes a quick glance head fake to his right. This is Mahomes. Fakes to his right. Just enough to give that defender time to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Just a split second. And he ran right past him. He did a head fake as if he was in the backyard.
Yeah.
He makes the game so pure, so easy to understand. But my gosh, so difficult to execute.
So difficult. Well, the 49ers have a couple of extraordinary defenders. One's Richard Sherman, Greg Eklund, the cornerback. And then there's Nick Bosa, who's just a rookie defensive lineman. But the guy's lighting it up already in the Pro Bowl. Tell us about them.
Well, Richard Sherman is well known for his career, not just for the 49ers, but even before the 49ers with the Seattle Seahawks. He has been in the Super Bowl. He is the veteran of that secondary. A great cover guy. He'll be all over Tyreek Hill
mm-hmm.
In the Super Bowl because he'll cover the best player opposite him on the offensive side.
But he can't stay with Tyreek Hill because nobody can stay with
Tyreek
Hill.
No, you're right. Nobody could stay with him. And what amazed me in one play, you might remember this, Al, where Patrick Mahomes, he didn't throw to his receiver. He threw to a spot, and Tyreek Hill was the receiver who got to the spot faster than anybody else.
Hmm.
And that's what not only Patrick Mahomes can do as a quarterback throwing to a spot, but that's what Tyreek Hill can do with his speed to get to that spot to catch it.
It still amazes me watching that guy play. It's like one of those guys, you know, he's like a cartoon character. He skitters around the field so fast, you can't believe it.
You talk about Tyreek Hill, and Greg just said something. He talked about a Super Bowl matchup that involved a Kansas City Chief.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still trying to wrap that around my head. You know, a Super Bowl matchup that involves Tyreek Hill. And we're going to go through this as fans, Steve,
mm-hmm.
as a community, as football participants, if you will, from a distance. Whether you're making the trip to Miami or you're just watching local news over the next couple of weeks and the coverage and the pregame, we're going to do all of this. And some players will talk. Some players will talk more. Richard Sherman's one of those guys who will talk more than most.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a mouthpiece, and it's himself. He's got because he's got the experience. He will be a football Hall of Famer.
And
one
he's
day.
Got a Stanford education too.
He's a full package guy. He backs it up. But just to hear Greg say, Tyreek Hill will be a matchup in the Super Bowl. I'm still trying to wrap my head around all that, because the Chiefs have just ended 50 years of futility.
You know, I can remember going out to Kauffman Stadium when the Royals got into the World Series the first time in 2014. We were doing a broadcast out there and looking down on the field and seeing that World Series
logo,
you know, in the grass there, and looking down there thinking it didn't look right. It doesn't make sense.
It's like, is this?
Yeah.
The Royals won that ALCS game the first year when Baltimore was here. They swept them. And 14, swept the Orioles. And I was in the tunnel watching the game, ready to go out on the field. And I said to myself, and we were, other members of the media, I said, the Royals are going to the World Series. Is this happening?
Yeah.
Is this happening?
Yeah.
And this, with the Chiefs going to the Super Bowl, is happening.
Yeah, no kidding. Just a couple of final points. I can't help but wonder about nerves here. These players are going to be performing in front of 100 million people. That's roughly how many people tend to watch these big games. It strikes me as it takes a special person to get out in front of 100 million people, Greg,
well,
and try to play a game.
And I'm sure they'll probably feel that in the opening minutes. But then, you know, once they get on the field and somebody's trying to knock the snot out of you, all that'll be forgotten.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, predictions here. How do you feel about this game going into it, Greg?
Despite what Al says and respects about the 49er defense, I think this is potentially an ugly game in favor of the Chiefs, a one-sided game.
They're going to win big, potentially.
I think so.
Wow, no kidding.
I think the Chiefs will win. I haven't done a lot of digestion or diagnosis of the lineups and the matchups,
right.
You know, I just haven't, because that's not what I do anymore,
mm-hmm.
you know, for a living. So
right.
I do think that the Chiefs have the better team. I think they've got the better head coach. I think they have the better potential to put more points on the board. I'm going to pick the Chiefs to win. I'm going to say by a touchdown.
Okay, there you have it. Two predictions for the Chiefs heading in.
A couple of homers
here.
Yeah.
A couple of homers here. But
I'll take it. Sure. You bet.
I agree with it. I raise my hand.
I
think that's where we're going here. So it's going to be fun to see what happens. I want to thank Al Wallace, a longtime sportscaster for Fox 4, his new memoir. It's a good one. One for the Coyotes. Greg Eklund here from KCUR. Go Chiefs. Let's see what happens, guys.
Let's see what happens.
Let's go.
Okay, after a short break, we'll come back and raise a different conversation on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day. How should Kansas City commemorate the great civil rights leader? We still haven't figured that out, the city going through that process one more time. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you haven't signed up yet for Kraske Off Mic, you're missing out. Sign up at kcur.org/Kraske for my weekly newsletter that offers behind-the-scenes extras and my insights on news and current events. It's quick and easy. Take it 10 seconds. kcur.org/Kraske. Tomorrow during this hour, hear NPR's live coverage of the impeachment trial of President Donald J. Trump. That's tomorrow. During this time slot on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, Kansas City voters decided last year to reverse a city council decision to rename the Paseo after Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. The move generated headlines nationwide, with many stories raising questions about why Kansas City has issues with Dr. King. Now, the city's park board is spending 90 days collecting ideas for how the city should honor Dr. King. Then the board will hold public meetings to weigh those ideas. This could happen as soon as next month. So, how do you think Kansas City should honor the late civil rights leader, or should it? Is it renaming a street? Is it renaming the fountain at the entrance of the Country Club Plaza? Is it renaming the new airport terminal after Dr. King? Folks, no guests here. You're our guest today. I'm hoping you'll call with your suggestions and comments as this city continues to wrestle with this idea. Our phone number, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. 888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Interested in your thoughts about where this city should go and how it should deal with Dr. King's legacy. We invited Dr. Reverend Vernon Howard back to our program for this conversation today. But it turns out, and I think we knew this, he's engaged in MLK Day activities with the Southern Christian Leadership Conference Center at Kansas City today. His response to our invitation, however, included this. We thought you'd find this interesting. It's a painful embarrassment and absurdity, he writes, that Kansas City is quagmired in such a debate about how to honor Dr. King in 2020. Let the record be stated once again that all African-American civil rights organizations in Kansas City, the City Council of Kansas City, 100 Martin Luther King Boulevard residents, and over 300 peace and justice community leaders and organizations came together to make MLK Boulevard a reality in this town. Our efforts were affirmed by 13,000 voters who want to keep Dr. MLK Boulevard where it is. The city is amid a moral dilemma as it faces its own rejection of the Dr. King legacy, while the nation, the world, and organizations like ours are lifting and celebrating it. Last night's violence and 149 murders in Kansas City last year are just a few illustrations of why we believe Kansas City urgently needs Dr. King's legacy and vision and principles and work elevated right where it is on approximately a 10-mile stretch running through the heart of the city, crossing diverse cultural and racial backgrounds. Those are the words of the Reverend Dr. Vernon Howard on this day. Let's go to some phone calls here as we try to navigate this question, this big question in Kansas City. How should we honor Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.? Let's go to David from Midtown. David, thanks for calling.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for calling. Yeah, appreciate it.
So we have two streets named after J.C. Nichols, and I think one of those could easily be renamed for Dr. King. My personal choice would be the one that runs through Country Club Plaza.
It's a short little street there, isn't it, David?
Yeah, about three blocks.
But your point for going after that one would be what? That it would make a pretty strong statement?
Yes.
What would that statement be?
I think it's a balancing statement. As I say, we have two streets named after J.C. Nichols, whose history with racial division is well known.
Now, you weren't the first one to make this suggestion. I know it's been kicked around, and I think it's an interesting one. Appreciate the phone call, David.
Thanks.
You bet. Let's go to Molly from Kansas City, Missouri here. Molly, you're on Up to Date.
Yes, thank you. Expanding David's idea, I think that Dr. Martin Luther King was working hard to bring opposing factions together his whole life. Both of our mayors in Kansas City, Missouri and Kansas City, Kansas have said, let's work together. So my suggestion is make state line Dr. Martin Luther King Boulevard.
That's interesting. I've not heard that one before. Why would that be such a powerful statement, do you think, Molly?
Because it spans the length of the city, and it also points out that we are two different states, but let's work together.
Interesting. Molly, great suggestion. Appreciate you making it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Our phone number here, our lines are full, 816-235-2888. Option B is to tweet us at KCUR up to date. We'll try to get as many of these thoughts on as the city's Parks Board wrestles with this suggestion. They'll have some public hearings coming up in a few weeks to kick this idea around. Let's go to Harold from Kansas City, Kansas. Harold, nice to have you. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, my suggestion, name, they're rebuilding the airport. I say name the airport after Dr. King.
Why do you like that idea, Harold?
Why?
Yes.
Well, me personally, the airport is, number one, is more, I guess there's more people and D.C. named that airport after person and
after President Reagan, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and the airport, you know, it'll show. You know, if you name the airport, it'll it'll be more it'll show more concern, effort. I don't know the
right
word.
It'd be a big statement, you're saying, Harold, to name the terminal, the new terminal, after Dr. King.
Yes.
Okay. Appreciate that call, Harold. Thanks so much for making it. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You bet. Let's go to Alan from Olathe. Alan, nice to have you on the program.
Yes. The Paseo is a north-south street that is east of the red line that was divided Kansas City.
Right.
They should take an east-west street, like 63rd Street or 47th Street, to go from the state line all the way across and bisects the red line.
Why is that such a powerful statement in your view, Alan?
Well, it's just been that way for years and years, that east of Troost was the African-American side of town and west of Troost was the whites.
Right.
And by bisecting it, it would like join both east, the whites and the blacks, the east and the west. And that's what Martin Luther King was about.
Alan, thanks for the call. And I should mention that Glenn has emailed us a very similar thought. Since I'm not able to call in today, I wanted to add my thoughts to the complex subject of renaming the Paseo. In my opinion, he writes, the way to connect the city and dissolve the racial divide is to rename an intersecting street, say 63rd, in order to knit Troost and the Paseo. I mentioned Troost because it too has become the symbol of the dividing line. By moving away from that concept, I believe we can truly honor Dr. King and tighten our community. Diane emailed us this. What about renaming J.C. Nichols Parkway because Nichols developed so many properties with restrictive covenants? Okay, the Plaza Association will never allow that to happen. Kansas City is still a segregated town, she writes. Google Maps still has Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard on the divided section of Paseo. It looks good. Can't pro-Paseoites share that idea, she writes. Okay, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. We're talking about great ideas for how to honor Dr. Martin Luther King on this Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day here in Kansas City. Lots of services commemorating the great civil rights leader taking place around town this evening. I've been to some of them over the years. It's a great way to spend some time in town if you have the day off and are looking to get out a little bit here. Okay, let's go back to some calls. Again, 816-235-2888. Let's go to Thurman from Manhattan, Kansas. Thurman, good morning.
Hi. I actually think that perhaps it should be named after the only institutions that actually reflect Martin Luther King's vision, which include brotherhood, teamwork, and working together.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps the stadium area, perhaps the stadium itself, the football stadium, should be called Martin Luther King Football Stadium.
That's it. Instead of Arrowhead, you're saying.
Right.
Yeah.
What kind of two birds with one stone?
What kind of statement would that make, do you think, Thurman?
Like I said, it's the only institution probably in Kansas City that reflects his vision. I think that makes a strong statement.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad you called, Thurman. Thanks a lot for making the effort. I appreciate it.
Uh-huh. Bye.
You know, while we have a chance on this King Day, I want to replay a couple excerpts from some of King's more memorable speeches. This first one, I think you'll recognize it, from the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, August 28th, 1963, obviously in Washington, D.C. He calls for an end to racism in this country before a crowd of 250,000 people. We're not going to hear the famous line in this clip, but we'll hear Dr. King explain why they had gathered on that memorable day.
In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. So we've come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children.
That's Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., his famous I Have a Dream speech, August 28, 1963, in which he talked about the fierce urgency of now. Just a wonderful expression, and one that only Dr. King could deliver as well. Back to some phone calls here as we talk about ways that Kansas City can commemorate Dr. King. Jay from Overland Park, good morning.
Hi, good morning. So my idea, because I noticed that both Kansas City and the Kansas side, so Johnson County, the guy Johnson County was named after Johnson, and J.C. Nichols are both like, they both had very racist political policies. So I think maybe commemorating a building in Kansas and then renaming J.C. Nichols Parkway or the Fountain or something to Martin Luther King, that way we have something on both sides of the state line.
Interesting.
Because the Johnson guy, he was racist. He was horrible.
What's so Overland Park doing to commemorate Dr. King, Jay?
I'm not specifically sure that Overland Park is specifically doing anything,
right.
But I think that there would definitely be support in the city. I mean, I know living on the Kansas side, I would definitely support Overland Park to do something.
Right. I'm glad you called, Jay.
The city council and everyone would too.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Let's go to Daniel from Grandview. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. What's your idea, Daniel?
Well, the idea of, I think they just renamed it Mill Creek Park. But that's where a lot of protests and demonstrations go on. And I think that would be a great place to rename Martin Luther King Jr. Park.
Mill Creek Park right there in the plaza, right?
That's right.
Okay. I'm glad you called, Daniel. Thank you. I just want to point out that KCUR reporter Michelle Tyrene Johnson recently traveled to three destinations, Amsterdam, Memphis, and Dakar, to get some global perspective on this back and forth over how Kansas City should commemorate Dr. King's life. You can hear and read her stories at kcur.org, and you can join her and Kansas City poet Glenn North on January 29th at 6 at the Bruce R. Watkins Cultural Heritage Center and Museum for a discussion of this reporting project and Kansas City struggles to commemorate Dr. King. Again, 6 o'clock on January 29th at the Bruce Watkins Heritage Center. Let's go to Deborah from Kansas City, Missouri. Deborah, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I wanted to offer my thoughts.
Please.
About One, I absolutely think that Kansas City is way behind in honoring Dr. King. Although I did not support the Paseo being renamed, I would like to see either something like 63rd Street, which I think an emailer recommended, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. Meyer Boulevard, because Kansas City has a long history of the north, you know, east-west boundaries, with the north running like Troost, Prospect being strong dividing lines.
Right.
If we had an east-west street, that crosses more socioeconomic sectors, more diversity in the community to knit them together. If it were Meyer Boulevard, you have the African-centered high school
right.
at the east end, an entrance into Swope Park, the Meyer Fountain.
I'm going to grab some more here, Deborah, and I really appreciate okay. you calling, because that suggestion is coming up as often as any other. Carrie from Lee Summit. Carrie, good morning.
Good morning. I am suggesting that Kansas City put forward an MLK Action Center. So rather than doing something just a name, like a street name, although I think that's a good idea, and redoing a park, I think an action center where we aren't just doing things in name, that we're taking specific actions that would honor Dr. King's legacy.
Interesting idea. I'm glad you called, Carrie. Thanks so much. Let's grab one more here. Rochelle from Roland Park. Good morning.
Good morning. I love what Carrie just said, and it's kind of what I was thinking. Maybe we could take one of these empty schools and turn it into a facility where it helps people who are needing to learn job skills, how to interview, and even provide some health, child care, or maybe even some help with getting off of drugs.
Right.
And I think that would be something we could support all through the year rather than just on one day.
Rochelle, I'm glad you called. Thank you for your suggestion. Kevin from Midtown was going to suggest the airport. That's gotten some backing, too. This city's struggle with this is going to be fascinating to watch as this conversation moves forward through the city's Parks Board in the weeks to come. Tomorrow on the show, Up to Date will be preempted as the Senate impeachment trial begins. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Chelsea Engstrom. Happy King Day to all. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.